This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight...
They've called together the countries along the Balkan route and brought them here to Vienna to discuss the Balkan route. And what I'm seeing is coming out of the meeting and have heard in this press conference, they're planning to keep it closed.
That's Carrie Skyring reporting on a European ministers' meeting to continue to block the Balkans' route to migrants trying to enter Europe. Details are coming up. Also, Somalia's new parliament votes in a new head of state. Germany's new director of migration says her agency will accelerate a backlog of 435,000 asylum claims. And 6 years after the Arab Spring, Tunisia appears to be the leading hope for democratic change. We'll have these stories and more, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Somalia has a new president. Former Prime Minister Mohamed Abdullah Farmaajo was declared the winner when incumbent President Hassan Sheikh Mahamud conceded defeat after two rounds of voting. Farmaajo holds dual citizenship in Somalia and the United States. The Associated Press reports while the incumbent held a small lead after the first round of voting, Farmaajo had a clear lead after a second round. After the new president took the oath of office, he said the victory belongs to the Somali people, adding it is the beginning of an era of unity, democracy, and the fight against corruption. While the election had the backing of the U.S. and other nations, there have been many reports of abuse of the electoral process. Somalia is one of seven mostly Muslim countries named in President Trump's executive order on immigration. The U.S. has assisted the Somali government in anti-terror strikes against al-Shabaab militants. Two mortar rounds believed fired by al-Shabaab landed near the election venue. However, security was very tight for today's vote by members of the upper and lower houses of the legislature. The vote is an effort to form a fully functioning central government and comes after years of chaos and conflict. Over the past 10 years, the U.S. has provided Somalia with $240 million to help rebuild the country politically and economically. Another $196 million is planned for this year. Meanwhile, in northeastern Somalia, suspected al-Shabaab militants launched an attack on a hotel in the Red Sea port town of Bosaso today. Four hotel guards and two attackers died during a gun battle. Officials in northern Cameroon say Boko Haram is hitting back against regional military pressure with suicide attacks. Rarely a week goes by without reports of a bombing. To protect border communities, Cameroon is reinforcing the capabilities of local self-defense groups who help the military. Moki Edwin Kinziga reports for VOA from Mora.
Music is played to welcome 200 recruits of the self-defense group in Mora on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria. Among the thousands witnessing the exercise is Far North Region Governor Mijiyawa Bakari.
Sur très haute instruction du chef de l'État, son excellence Paul Biya.
The governor tells the recruits President Paul Biya has instructed him to visit all border localities to congratulate and encourage self-defense groups and traditional rulers that have been courageously defending people from Boko Haram. Regional troops say they have pushed the terrorists from much of the territory they once occupied. But Boko Haram has resorted to a campaign of suicide attacks, often targeting civilians. The governor gave the vigilantes in Mora motorcycles, bicycles, metal detectors, and cash to help with their effort. Dele Paul leads the self-defense group in Mora.
Ils sont presque déjà finis. Ils sont presque déjà finis et on est prêt à leur finir encore.
He says they are more than ever before determined to eradicate suicide bombings in their locality. There have been concerns about relying on vigilantes, including about the possibility of human rights violations. Last year, some members of self-defense groups were arrested and dismissed on suspicion Boko Haram had infiltrated their ranks. But officials say the self-defense groups are doing much-needed work that saves lives. This is their home. They know their way around, and they share intelligence with the military. VOA joined members of the Mora self-defense group in the field. Strong winds blow over the village late Tuesday. 80 vigilantes armed with machetes, bow and arrows, knives, metal detectors and spears gather to take over from those who worked the afternoon. While the military is tasked with protecting the nation's borders, the self-defense group makes sure no stranger enters their village. Group leader Kadir Usmanu says they have been given cell phones to call the military when they see suspects. He says they are sacrificing for the well-being of their village. VOA could not join them on their patrol near the border. The military said it was not safe. Mora village chief Joseph Manauda says thanks to the vigilantes, the population can sleep at night. He says self-defense groups may not have guns, but they have succeeded in stopping so many attacks. He says when the vigilantes stop suspicious people from crossing into Cameroon, they also inform Nigerian traditional rulers across the border. He says the vigilantes also communicate with Nigerian self-defense groups about suspects crossing the border. Several dozen self-defense group members have been killed in northern Cameroon. Salih Ali Muhammad says he narrowly escaped death. The 44-year-old had been assigned to the island of Lake Chad with his two brothers, who are both men. He says two armed Boko Haram fighters forced them at gunpoint to sail through Lake Chad to a village in Cameroon. He says he knew that they would be killed after rendering the service, so he attacked one of the terrorists and they fell into the lake. He says his two brothers attacked the other terrorist while other boat men called the military, which came to their rescue. He walked away with a bullet in his right hand and was treated at a government hospital for free. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Mora, Northern Cameroon.
The Interior and Defense Ministers of 13 European nations met today in Vienna to discuss the challenges posed by migration. They are preparing for an unexpected increase in migrants and refugees in the spring when the weather begins to warm. Austria hosted today's meeting. It helped coordinate efforts last year to close migrant routes through the Balkans. Reporter Carrie Skyring is following the story. From Vienna, he spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua about the meeting and the follow-up press conference.
Well, it's exactly 1 year since the Balkan route was effectively closed, and that was on the initiative of the Austrian government, Austrian ministers. And so 1 year later, they've called together the countries along the Balkan route and brought them here to Vienna to discuss the Balkan route. And what I'm seeing is coming out of the meeting, and I've heard in this press conference, they're planning to keep it closed and to reduce even further the small number of migrants and refugees coming along it at the moment.
Is it a more unified approach? Because I remember last year, individual countries were taking their own actions.
It is a more unified approach, and that's what Austria is trying to organize. I guess Austria being basically at the northern end of the Balkan route, it's in Austria's interest to see these borders closed further south. That means they have to put less resources on their own borders and deal with fewer numbers coming here. So Austria is trying to coordinate, but you see a different approach from different countries. You see Hungary basically closed 100%. But you will find countries like Croatia, Serbia, and Slovenia not so effective, if you like, at closing their borders and taking somewhat of a more liberal approach, and refugees are getting through. So the approach is different, but Austria is trying to have a unified approach, and that's what this meeting was about. They're talking about forward planning in case the pressure along the route increases at some point in the future, perhaps when the weather gets better, and they want to be able to deploy resources from one country to another if the pressure from migrants and refugees coming up that Balkan route increases in the future.
Any idea how much pressure they're expecting, considering that the European Union and Turkey still have that deal in place that at least slows a lot of the refugees coming from Turkey into Greece?
Well, the Austrian Defense Minister, Mr. Doskozil, has been talking about this. He says we can't guarantee that this agreement with Turkey will hold, that they could open the gates again, as he put it, and we have to be ready for that. So they're planning for a situation where the agreement with Turkey doesn't hold and that there might be another flood of refugees out of Turkey, in which case they would be coming, most of them, to the Balkan route, so across the narrow straits to Greece, to the island of Lesbos, and then further on up through those countries. And Austria is even suggesting, well, we'd like to be able to provide our soldiers to other countries along the Balkan route to help their resources at controlling their borders. So you can see that Austria is quite serious about keeping this route as closed as possible.
Have the Interior and Defense Ministers announced a follow-up meeting?
Yes, and in fact, in April, we should hear from them again, because what they've announced is a Balkan border protection offensive, and they're putting together plans for the future, and that should be announced at some point around about April. They're also looking for another meeting, which is designed to coordinate the return of unsuccessful refugees, so illegal migrants whose application for asylum has been rejected. So they want to coordinate that, and that is also coming out of this meeting, another coordination measure, if you like, as well as closing the borders, also coordinating on returning unsuccessful refugees.
That's reporter Kerry Skyring from Vienna. He spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua. Well, Germany's new director of migration and refugees says her agency will accelerate a backlog of 435,000 asylum claims and step up deportations of those rejected. Jutta Kort tells Germany's Handelsblatt newspaper her agency has received more than $40 million in funding. In the past 2 years, more than 1 million migrants have arrived in Germany from the Middle East, Africa, and elsewhere, but a spate of migrant-initiated attacks in Europe has made the issue politically sensitive. In December, a 24-year-old Tunisian man who had been rejected for asylum killed a dozen people after ramming a truck into a Berlin Christmas market. Zimbabwe's highest court has dismissed a case filed by an activist who argued President Robert Mugabe violated the Constitution and is therefore unfit for office. Sebastian Mofu has the latest from the courthouse in Harare.
Robert Mugabe has led Zimbabwe since independence in 1980, but the 92-year-old president has faced mounting calls to step down. Protests erupted last year over human rights abuses as the economy sank to new lows. Opposition activist Promise Mkwananzi filed a court petition alleging the president failed to uphold the constitution during the unrest. In his complaint, Mkwananzi cited cases where Mugabe threatened the judiciary and activists and said he personally owns the security forces. The Constitutional Court threw out the case Wednesday. The court said the president had not been served with the papers. Mukwananzi's lawyer, Kudzai Kadzere, told VOA the sheriff was paid but failed to do his duty.
I feel that this is a very important case for our local jurisprudence and it must be heard on the merits, which is why we are going to file a fresh application.
A ruling from the Constitutional Court could trigger impeachment proceedings in parliament, but on Wednesday, Mugabe's lawyer, Terence Hussein, shrugged off the case.
This tenure, his mandate has emanated from the people, from an election, and I hardly think the court would want to interfere with that unless they have very, very good grounds. And I don't think anyone has made out those grounds sufficiently enough.
Mukwananzi's organization, hashtag Tajamuka, which means we are fed up, says it will not turn down the heat. Member Morini Kademaunga was in the courtroom Wednesday.
It is not just promise Mukwananzi versus the president of Zimbabwe. I think when I looked at the application, read it, I concurred with his submissions. I believe that the president has flouted the constitution and really must be answerable in the matters that he raises. He will not be discouraged. Hashtag Tajamuka will not be discouraged and will file again and will be here in full support.
Hashtag Tajamuka is taking part in a current initiative known as 21 Days of Activism Zimbabwe, which is calling on Mugabe to forgo expensive birthday celebrations later this month. An official from the ruling ZANU-PF party told VOA the event will not be cancelled as Mugabe is revered as Zimbabwe's liberator. The party has begged Mugabe to run for another term in 2018. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Thank you, Sebastian. In related news, the Zimbabwe Peace Project, a watchdog group, has called on the country's Human Rights Commission and regional bodies to pressure the government to release all political prisoners. It says they should be guaranteed their right to freedom of expression. The Zimbabwe Peace Project is an NGO founded by faith-based and human rights groups. Also, Zimbabwe presidential spokesman George Charamba has reacted to criticism earlier this week by the U.S. Embassy. The embassy urged the government to respect human rights. However, Charamba said Zimbabwe is waiting for a cue from the Trump administration about future relations. In the meantime, he says U.S. critics of Zimbabwe can go and hang on a banana tree. You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Coming up on 23 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed, better known as Farmajo, wins the Somali presidential election. And the interior and defense ministers of 13 European nations met today in Vienna to discuss the challenges posed by migration. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Six years after the Arab Spring, hope for democratic reforms has often been replaced by conflict and humanitarian crises. Syria has suffered a devastating civil war. Libya has three competing governing bodies. Yemen has been embroiled in war for almost 2 years. And Egypt has been labeled by Freedom House as the worst state in North Africa when it comes to civil rights and political participation. But there is a bright spot. Tunisia was rated as the only free country in North Africa in the Freedom House annual report. Maharazia Labidi is a member of the Tunisian Parliament and former Deputy Speaker of the Tunisian National Constituent Assembly. She spoke with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawy about Tunisia being a role model for democratic transition in the Arab world.
We do not pretend to be a model, but we are trying to stick to this dream of building a Tunisia, democratic Tunisia, pluralist Tunisia, Tunisia for all Tunisian, whatever is their belonging, ideologically, religiously, or from their social class anyway. What we have really achieved is being capable of dialogue, even in the most difficult situation. This is the key. This is the key. How to sit together around the table and try to settle issues through dialogue and not by arms. And in giving the importance to the life of all Tunisians, no single Tunisian life
can be sacrificed for power. No. Life must be saved, and this is the first, I think, dialogue, respect of life, of human dignity, and accepting the other, diversity.
How differently did the Muslim Democratic Nahda Party deal with the political transition compared with the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt?
It is evident that we have dealt differently. Even if we have stemmed from the same, let's say, idea of revivalist movements, since the early 80s we have developed along different lines. In Tunisia, Nahda has, let's say, take the objective of being democratic, meeting the other, discussing with different political families. And I remember in October 18th in 2005, when all the opposition from Communist Party to Nahda met together to say no to dictatorship, but at the same time to discuss about what Tunisia we want. And to agree on 10 points. Among these 10 points are peaceful alternation to power, respect of human rights, of women rights, and democracy, democracy, democracy. Maybe this experience is lacking elsewhere, like, for example, in Egypt.
Tunisia was the only North African country to be rated as free in Freedom House report. How did Tunisia become a role model for respecting political rights and civil liberties?
Due to the advocacy of civil society and the quite high level of education and the commitment of many Tunisian political parties, even if they disagree on the manner or on the vision, they agree on this objective. We have to respect human rights. We have to provide a public space where every Tunisian can express himself, herself, can not be threatened in his life or in his thought or in his conscience. This is why we succeeded something, we achieved something in the Constitution. I was myself surprised when we voted in Article 6, freedom of conscience.
Meherazia Labidi is a member of the Tunisian Parliament. She spoke with VOA's Mohamed Elshenawy. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our African News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth look at the northern Nigeria-based terrorist group Boko Haram. The militant group has targeted both Muslims and Christians, killing more than 20,000 people since 2009. VOA has exclusively obtained secret video shot by Boko Haram that identifies its operatives committing acts of terror. We'll discuss the violent organization on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.